Welcome to the Social Impactors Podcast. This podcast is all about impact. We work to highlight impactful individuals making positive social change in their communities. From coaches, authors, entrepreneurs, influencers, we tap into the minds of some of the most impactful people around the world to find out how they have built a life of creating impact. Now listen in and be ready to go on a journey of enlightenment, motivation, and awe. Social impact everywhere.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Impactors Podcast, a podcast where we highlight people making positive social change in their communities. And today we have Alona, and Alona and I met at my job, actually, at the college, and she is doing some incredible work at Waterloo University. And I won't tell too much about it because I know you know a lot more because you're doing it. And I just want to start off with first saying thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast. And I'd love for you just to introduce, you know, who you are, what you do, and why you believe you're a social impact.
Sure. So my name is Ilona Doretti, and I'm the managing director of the Youth and Innovation Project at the University of Waterloo. And basically, we're a project that's all about understanding the unique abilities of 15 to 25-year-olds, so the unique abilities of young people, why those unique abilities should be valued, and how young people can contribute to social and environmental and economic change. So we really believe that young people have a lot to offer when it comes to finding and implementing solutions. So I'm certainly very passionate about what I do.
And I remember when you had come up for a conference that we had hosted at the college, you had talked about people under the age of 25 and technically not being savants, but being creative geniuses at that age. And I'd just love for you to explain that a little bit more for people who are watching, because I love that idea.
Sure. So we actually published a paper in a U.S. academic journal recently that makes the case that from 15 to 25, young people's brains are actually at the height of lifetime innovation potential. So because at that stage of life, we have increased neuroplasticity, which means we're more open to ideas and new experiences than we are when we're younger and when we're older. And also by 15, young people have the full intellectual capacity of adults. So they have the ability to really think, you know, in all the gray area, you know, and really understand all the nuance of finding, you know, of making or understanding, I guess, complex problems and finding solutions to those problems. So this period of life from 15 to 25, as a result of both those things, is a really powerful moment in our lives. And we often focus on this deficit narrative. So the media talks about how our brains aren't fully mature until we're 25, but it doesn't talk about the fact that there are unique abilities that we have when we're young that actually start declining when we hit 25. So what our work really talks about is how we need to not only value the things that older folks older than 25 have to offer, which is so much, right? You know, wisdom and experience, all these great things that we develop as we get older, but we also really need to value the unique capacities of young people, which includes being able and willing to challenge the status quo, having higher kind of this, being at this peak of creativity, being more observant and collaborative, all sorts of things that are really incredible abilities that young people have.
I love it because it's such a flip on the modern script, right? Of young adults and that weird generational part between being a child and being young, being youth and being an adult. And it's such a flip. And I know that, you know, if you give opportunities to young people, they shine in so many areas. And it's because of these, you know, unique abilities they have with creativity and collaboration and communication. There's such a cool, I hope that what you're doing, I hope that really does change it, because it's beautiful what we can do, what young people can do when given the tools and resources to do so, with guidance and direction, but the creativity to create.
Yeah, I mean, our work is all about intergenerational partnership, right? So it's recognizing the value that we all have to offer. The incredible thing is that young people don't just need us to give them opportunity, right? It is good for healthy development for young people to have purpose and have an opportunity to make impact in their communities. The research is pretty clear that that helps young people be healthier. But also we need them, You know, so we really believe that youth engagement is a social and economic imperative, that we're just not going to survive in an era of instability and rapid change if we don't tap into young people's unique abilities. So we really want to move away from this, you know, feel good, we engage young people just because it's the right thing to do and it makes us all happy, to really recognize that meaningfully engaging young people and thinking of young people differently and valuing their abilities is actually really essential.
I love that. That's amazing. So let's jump into the first official question then. And it's about the community side of it. And so how are you making an impact in your community, a positive impact? What does that look like? How are you doing that?
So I've certainly, I think over the course of my life, done that in a bunch of different ways. I was a young leader myself growing up in rural Canada. So I grew up in northern Saskatchewan in the Yukon and had lots of opportunities. I was very fortunate to have lots of opportunities to make a direct impact on my community and feel like I had a voice as a young leader in my community. But I also have been really fascinated by kind of government and democracy and public policy and institutions and how institutions need to change, as well as why it's important to do work on the ground. So those two things were certainly part of my experience as a young leader, is working on both kind of those two levels at the grassroots community level, and then in terms of public policy. And I brought those together in an organization I founded when I was 23 years old. That's called Apathy is Boring, and it's now been around for a while, and is all about getting young people out to vote and encouraging them to get involved in their communities. So I was able, again, to kind of connect my passion for mobilizing young people and my passion for really believing that democracy and strengthening our institutions is important as well. So I ran Apathy is Boring for 10 years and have since handed that organization off to an incredible group of young leaders who is now carrying on that important work. And how I'm really impacting my community now is, I guess I would say that my community is now kind of North America wide. And we're really, the work that I'm doing at the University of Waterloo is really about systems change. So it's about changing the narrative of what it means to be young. It's about helping people think differently about young people so that they act differently when they're in contact with young people and when they're working together with young people. So it's not kind of tangible on the ground work, although I do a lot of mentorship of young people, which I still absolutely love and certainly feeds the work that they do. But I think systems change work is equally as important to make sure that we're not just, again, putting band-aids on problems, but we're actually starting to think differently so that we find longer term solutions.
Yeah, it's that systemic change. And I know you said changing systems, but when there is systemic change, it's hard. It's a difficult thing to actually change. It involves traditions and people's cultures and people's biases. And because of that, it's such a large part of who we are, right? But I find a lot of times, especially in the institutional sector, and I want to say education, it's a very traditional sector, right? And a lot of it is legacy projects, which then are built on other legacy projects, and it keeps going. And it's hard, but when we break those barriers down, there's so much opportunity already existing in the sector that's just waiting to be given to young people, or waiting to be given to champions of or agents of change, right? And it's because of these legacy projects and systems in place that stop that. And that's just my opinion. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've noticed a lot, especially in the education sector.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think the work, the systems change work, is really about confronting power and recognizing that sometimes we get stuck because people want to hold on to their power, or people, you know, this is the way we've always done it, so we're going to keep doing it that way.
Yeah.
You know, so systems changing work is not straightforward or easy. It's really about challenging those things that seem unmovable. But it is pretty incredible, you know, when you're able to get something unstuck, exactly as you say, like it has a whole cascading effect. So it's not just, you know, again, it's the kind of story, you know, we talk about if you feed somebody for a day, or if you feed, you know, give somebody a fish, they'll be fed for a day. If you teach them how to fish, they'll be able to feed themselves. And, you know, I think, you know, systems change work, or the way I've heard it described, is about disrupting the whole fishing industry and instead saying, well, you know, why don't you farm instead of fish, right? Like, it's about like just totally thinking completely differently about solutions and problems, and going to maybe solutions that aren't necessarily quite as obvious. So it's hard work, and it's not the kind of work where you see impacts immediately all the time, but it's certainly satisfying to be kind of thinking about these problems in a different way.
No, it's true. That's why I'm drawn to the innovation spaces, because there's so much opportunity to build for me better social impact, right? Because there are existing resources. It's just that flow through channel sometimes is blocked by legacy or blocked by tradition and system.
Totally.
But let's jump into the second question then, and it's about business. And this might be a really cool thing for you, because I know you're in this space, but do you believe social impact is an important part of business? And if so, why?
I would say that's a pretty obvious yes on my part. I mean, I think that hopefully we're all doing things in our lives, or one would hope. I hope that humans. Let me phrase this another way. Mm-hmm. I think inherent and important for all of us is having a sense of purpose, mm-hmm. And I think that's becoming even more essential for younger generations. And younger generations are demanding, that purpose be kind of at the center of their work lives and in their lives in general. And so, so I think businesses that allow employees to have a sense of purpose in their daily work, and feel as though they're working towards something that is meaningful, are going to be more successful. And in fact, I think these younger generations are just going to demand that of all companies, and we're certainly seeing that trend. So, so not only is it important and essential for business, in the sense that, like, I would rather everybody work towards positive social and environmental goals than not, but I think it's just becoming essential for the bottom line. I think that's what I'd say about that.
Yeah. And I love that answer. I really do. And it's funny, because there is, there are scientific studies that have shown that when you have, i.e. a triple bottom line, or you have at least social impact as a mandate in your business, you tend to do better. And there's a couple factors, right? It's that customer piece, right? There's that customer appreciation. There's also more opportunity for business now. Like, there are a couple factors, but, they always do better. And I love that script is finally flipped. That one especially, right? Where these businesses that are socially conscious or have a social conscience, they always tend to shine more than others that don't. And I saw this really interesting statistic that said that 60% of Fortune 500 businesses since 2000 are completely gone. And a lot of it has to do with factors that relate back to that social conscience in business, right? 60% of Fortune 500 businesses. Like, it's an absurd amount, but it's showing that shift, right?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, and I think it's going to become even more stark. So I think, social and environmental kind of purpose is something that, employees, but also customers are going to demand.
I love it. Awesome. So there's one last question then, and this one's about community and communities as a whole. What do they do? But what is your advice for others to begin making a positive social or positive impact in their communities?
I mean, definitely start where you are. I was speaking to a friend earlier today, and she was speaking about how everything you do, and I've heard it, other people talk about this, you know, everything you do has an impact, and we can sometimes forget that and focus on, the really big things, but actually we are having an impact in every interaction we have, in the way we do our work, the way we interact with our families, we are having an impact. So I think it's just about recognizing or asking the question, how am I living my life, I guess, or am I living my life in a way that's consistent with my values? Maybe even just starting with asking, like, what are my values? And then start really being aware of kind of how every interaction reflects or does not reflect those values. And I think that can be a really powerful exercise before you even think about, you know, founding an organization or, you know, doing, like, quitting your job and, like, getting a job in the social sector, right? Like, these can be really tangible things that we can do. And and they aren't just necessarily about impact with one person. You know, that can also, it can all, you can also look at the environmental impact your actions are having. So, yeah, I think that's an important place to start. Those things really matter. And, you know, as somebody who's had the good fortune of having the support to start an organization, and now to be having co-created this research project and doing these kind of big, bold projects, it still comes down to how you run your organization, the interactions you have with your staff every day, and your volunteers, and your board, and, you know, how you go home at the end of the day, you know, and are you burnt out? You know, all of those things are really essential and influence the kind of impact that you end up having. So, you know, I think it's really critical that we kind of start with the small building blocks and then build up. Bold visions are essential. And I think that often Canadians are not ambitious enough and not bold enough. So I'm not saying don't be bold, quite the opposite. I'm saying build that boldness on a foundation of recognizing that we have agency and choice in every action throughout the day that can be incredibly powerful.
One thing that you said that really hit home for me is that many times when you have these big, bold ideas or these, you know, disruptive businesses or industries, it's because of those small building blocks, right? It is, it's a domino effect, but it's building up that capacity to the point where you can do these things, right? Like, I'll give an extreme example. You know, Elon Musk, you know, everyone knows about him. He made the disruptive industry. He had three businesses beforehand and he went to school and he learned all these things. It was a building block for him. You don't just wake up and have these disruptive ideas work. You build the capacity to do so. And in there is a lot of it's, you know, emotional intelligence, being aware, social conscience. It's these human to human based skills that really build that capacity for disruptive change.
Totally. And, you know, I would say it's a combination of just trying stuff.
And failing.
Yeah, and failing. And I mean, I probably founded like half a dozen businesses and organizations, you know, and Bill Drayton from Ashoka actually talks about this, how the best way to become a change maker is to practice change making, especially before you're 20. Like most successful social entrepreneurs have been founding things from day one. So, you know, just try stuff. But also, you know, it's also about personal well-being. And there's an amazing project called the Well-Being Project that I've been fortunate to be associated with. And their tagline is well-being promotes well-doing, right? So again, it's not just about your business, and certainly maybe with Elon Musk, we're seeing the results of when you don't take care of yourself.
Yep, there is that now.
Right? That, you know, it's also gotta be about personal growth and personal development and really asking yourself hard questions, because your biases, things you haven't, you know, wounds you haven't healed, everything about you will show through in your business, you know, and that's the more purpose-driven we are with business, the reality of that becomes even more stark, as we as humans, are expressed through the organizations that we found. So it's really, really essential that you learn business skills, but that you also really get to know who you are and are really clear about what your motivations are. You got to be doing things for the right reasons, and it can't be about ego. It's got to be about really, you know, wanting to do something good in the world for the right reasons. So, so I think it's about building community, building support networks, and building a community around you who's going to really challenge you and ask you the hard questions kind of throughout.
Wow. No, I love that. And oh, I could talk about innovation and disruption forever, but I think that's a good place to land there. I think that conversation, you encapsulated at the end, just about doing it for the purpose-driven business, right? And I think that's exactly the key. And so, Alona, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being on the podcast and you know, talking about this and showcasing what you've done. Because I think, you know, even from what I saw before, you are the, you know, a model change maker. You are what people should aspire to be. And it means a lot to me for having you on the podcast.
Great. Well, it's been great to be with you.